Friends, welcome to another hour of enjoyable entertainment as I take you back in time to when folks gathered around the old radio in the parlor for the evening listening pleasure. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I'm pleased you've chosen to join me once again. Today is St. Patrick's Day if you're listening to the program on a Sunday, and I've selected two Irish-themed programs for your enjoyment. St. Patrick's Day is celebrated on March 17th because that is the traditional death date of St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland. The date has been an official Christian feast day since the early 1600s in certain Christian denominations, and legend has it that the shamrock was used by St. Patrick himself to teach the pagan Irish about the Trinity. First up is an episode from Family Theatre, which ran from February 13, 1947 until July 4, 1956, all on Mutual. The series is created to, quote, promote family unity, and while it emphasizes the importance of prayer, it is not heavily religious and is similar to other radio dramas of that era. Today's episode was first heard on the evening of Wednesday, March 16, 1949, and is titled Leprechaun Who Wouldn't Listen. Enjoy.
Ray Milland, Edmund Gwenn, Alan Young. Star on Family Theater. The Mutual Broadcasting System, in cooperation with Family Theater Incorporated, presents The Leprechaun Who Didn't Listen, starring Alan Young and Edmund Gwenn. Brief portions are transcribed. Ray Milland is your host.
Our Family Theater story this week is about a leprechaun. That's right, leprechaun. One of the little folk from Never Neverland. Everything about this leprechaun was fine, except that he wouldn't listen to anybody. Many of us are like that. Many fathers and mothers constantly hear of the dangers threatening the good spiritual and moral life of their family, but too often they don't listen. They forget to turn to God and ask his help through daily family prayers. They forget that the family that prays together stays together. Maybe it's time we started listening where our family is concerned, because they're the most important possession we have in the world. But about that leprechaun who wouldn't listen. His name was Johnny. Maybe I'd better let Edmund Gwenn tell you all about it.
Once upon a time, in the days when the good folk inhabited the earth, there lived a little leprechaun named Johnny. Now, as you know, all leprechauns are by nature shoemakers, and they possess the secret of wealth. If you ever catch a leprechaun, he's forced to tell you the secret. Yes, but a leprechaun is very hard to catch, for he's just 9 inches tall. From head to toe. Now, Johnny Leprechaun was doubly hard to catch, because he was just Easter, and he was only 4.5 inches tall. From head to toe. Johnny was the pride and joy of the good folk, and he tried very hard to learn all the things that would make him help to grow up to be the finest leprechaun in the whole fairy kingdom. But once in a while, like little boys today, Johnny didn't listen. Nah, and that's why we have a story to tell.
Pop?
Eh?
Why do I have to learn to make shoes?
Don't ask foolish questions.
Why, Pop?
All leprechauns are shoemakers, you know that.
Why, Pop?
Well, it's tradition. Even back in the days of King Oberon, we were shoemakers.
Who was King Oberon?
Johnny, you haven't been studying your history. King Oberon was king of all the good folk.
Ah.
Well, who did you think he was?
I didn't know. Pop, did any leprechaun ever get caught and have to give up the secret?
Just once. A man named Midas tricked him.
And Midas became real wealthy?
Wealthy, he cleaned up.
What happened to the leprechaun?
He lost his union card. Mm.
Pop.
Hmm?
Do you think I'll make a good leprechaun?
You shut up and stop asking so many questions.
Now today, children, we take up invisibility. Do any of you know what invisibility is? Well, you're invisible when you can't be seen. Only the good folk know how to become invisible. And the magic trick is only used when absolutely necessary. Naturally, we leprechauns have to know how. It helps us to escape when those silly humans chase us, to learn the secret of wealth. Mildred, pay attention. To make yourselves unseen at any time, just say, "Listen, meadows, listen, moors, land of enchantment, open your doors." Then cross your feet, spin three times in a circle, and poof, you're gone. Now we'll practice. We'll take this side of the class first.
That afternoon, Johnny went to a deserted part of the enchanted forest, where the good folk hardly ever went. And he determined to practice the spell until he could do it perfectly. First, he forgot the words. Then, he got twisted up. And when he had the words right, he'd cross his feet and spin in a circle. And he'd get so dizzy, he'd lose his balance before he'd gone round three times. But finally, he thought he had it mastered. He sat down on a twig to get his breath, and then he concentrated very hard and began the spell in earnest.
Listen, meadows. Listen, moors. Land of enchantment, open your doors.
And wonder of wonders, the spell worked. Yes, when Johnny stopped spinning, he looked down at his body. Oh, he was slowly fading away. And then he was gone.
Gee, it worked. I'm invisible. Wait till the kids see this.
For a while, the little leprechaun danced around, playfully enjoying his mysterious new state. And then, the thought hit him. He hadn't learned how to reverse the spell.
Pop. Pop, this is important.
It can wait.
Pop, look at me.
Johnny, where are you? Stop playing games.
I'm right here, Pop. I'm invisible.
Oh, no.
What's the matter, Pop?
Did they teach you that in school?
Yes, sir. Today.
Well, I've had trouble enough keeping track of you before. Now, I don't know what I'll do. What did you want to know?
I want to be visible again. I'm hungry.
You're always hungry. Well, just work the spell. There's no problem to that.
I can't.
You can't? Well, what's the matter? Are you tongue-tied, or have you forgotten it already?
The teacher didn't get that far.
It's a fine place to stop.
We weren't supposed to do it all the way through.
Oh, I see. And little Johnny Leprechaun had to be the wise guy, huh? He couldn't wait with the other kids. Oh, no, he had to try it all the way through.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry. What good does that do?
Well, I thought maybe it would do some good.
Well, it doesn't. If I could see you, I'd take you over my knee so fast it'd make your head swim. It isn't enough anymore that you show up late for dinner with your face dirty and maybe your pants ripped. Oh, no, now you come here invisible. Oh, well, now, there's no use crying about it.
I'll be good, Pop, I promise. I'll never do another bad thing. But please, tell me how to be visible again.
That's just it. I haven't used that spell for years. I don't remember.
Pop racked his brain, but he couldn't remember the spell, no matter how hard he tried. So he sent Johnny to the teacher.
I told the students not to finish the spell. Oh, I was afraid something like this would happen. Johnny, you will stay after school every night for 2 weeks.
Ah, teacher.
That's my decision. And you must never, never do anything like that again.
But Johnny didn't listen. No. And of course, since he had to stay after school every night, this meant that he wasn't getting his sleep as a growing leprechaun should. So one day, nearing the end of the school year...
And so, children, that is the secret of wealth. Remember, you're honor-bound to tell any person who catches you. But you must do everything in your power to keep from being caught. Yes. Class dismissed.
What? Gee, I must have been asleep.
Yes, Johnny was asleep, just when the most important thing a leprechaun had to know was being discussed. The secret of wealth. Naturally, Johnny didn't know what he'd missed, but he was embarrassed at falling asleep, so he said...
Listen, meadows. Listen, moors. Land of enchantment. Open your doors.
And he faded right out of the classroom. It was late afternoon and the sun was lying in warm pools on the forest floor. It was a perfect day to go exploring in the mind of little Johnny Leprechaun. So, still invisible, little Johnny skipped and danced along, going deeper and deeper into the depths of the enchanted forest. Yes, and he went much further than he'd ever had before. Finally, he wasn't sure just where he was. And he came upon a pixie sleeping under a tree. Now, as we all know, pixies are very small. But the ones in the enchanted forest were over 2 feet tall. So they looked like giants to 9-inch leprechauns. And this pixie like a mountain to Johnny because Johnny was a youngster. And he was only 4.5 inches tall. From head to toe. Johnny led a sheltered life. He never met any other families of the fairy kingdom. But he had seen pictures of pixies, and he knew they were very big, so there was no doubt about it. This was a pixie.
Gosh, he's so big.
The pixie had a big black beard, and he was so big that when he breathed, the ground shook. Johnny thought it was the most unusual sight he'd ever beheld. So, naturally, he had to go just a teeny bit closer. Just then, something got in Johnny's nose and tickled it. He was standing right by the pixie's ear, and he tried and he tried to stop what he felt was coming, but all of a sudden... The huge pixie reached out in the direction of the sneeze, and because his arm was so long, he grabbed Johnny before he could move.
Well, what have we here? Invisible, eh? Why, you must be one of those scrawny little leprechauns.
I am not scrawny.
That's your opinion. Do you know who I am?
Yes, sir. You're a pixie.
That's right, my pint-sized friend. I'm Black Peter. I own the whole of the Enchanted Forest. I'm your landlord. I'm the wealthiest being in the fairy kingdom.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I know someone who's much richer.
Who is he?
Well, if you let go of me so I can breathe, I'll tell you.
You'll tell me anyway.
Please, let me down, Mr. Pixie. I feel dizzy.
Do you promise to tell if I set you down?
Oh, of course.
Well, all right. There. Now, who is the richest in the fairy kingdom?
The leprechauns are. They know the secret of wealth.
And
with those words, the naughty leprechaun ran away into the forest as fast as his little legs would carry him. Black Peter was furious. But Johnny had slipped away, and all the angry pixie could see were the pools of sunlight on the forest floor. Johnny walked and walked, and before long it was growing dark. Still was no familiar sign about him. Oh, soon the terrible realization came to him. He was lost. He sat down and cried. Cried until finally he curled up on a leaf and went to sleep. Night spread her velvet mantle over the fairy kingdom. And the mantle's thousand jewels that mortals call stars twinkled and cast their reflections on the drowsy earth. And in the darkness, a shadow moved silently between the great trees toward the home of the leprechauns with a message from Black Peter. The leprechauns read the message, and the news of what it contained spread like wildfire through the community. Glowworms lit up as the little folk got out of bed. And at Leprechaun Local 47, they gathered for a meeting.
This means, fellow leprechauns, as far as I can see, that the only course left open for us is to get out. And with the housing shortage in the fairy kingdom, the only possibility is Mortal Meadow.
So, the evacuation was begun. The leprechauns worked feverishly packing their belongings for the trip, and they worked so hard that by dawn, there wasn't a trace of a leprechaun in the whole enchanted forest. Except for one naughty youngster asleep on a leaf.
Oh, me. Oh, it's morning. I know where I am now.
Yes, with daylight to assist him, Johnny recognized a landmark and was soon sipping happily homeward. The more familiar things he spied, the faster he went. Until at the end, he was running. Yes, he ran right up to his old home and stopped.
There's nobody here. They're all gone. Pop! Pop! Where is everybody?
If Johnny had only listened before, he would never have gotten into trouble at all. But you know, once you stop listening to good advice, you get in deeper and deeper and deeper. So, Johnny threw himself on the ground and cried his little heart out. Suddenly, Johnny heard a noise. Giant footsteps coming closer and closer.
Oh, there.
Well, well. I recognize that voice, and I see you this time. What seems to be the trouble?
Where have they gone?
All your fellow leprechauns? You're the wealthiest being in the forest. Surely your wealth has brought you the answer.
Oh, no, sir. I don't have any money. I'm just a little leprechaun.
Changed your tune, haven't you? Well, I think I've taught you leprechauns a lesson, so I'll tell you. I raise the rent. 10 pairs of shoes a month. So they moved. And I'm rid of their noisy cobbling. And do you know where they moved? To Mortal Meadows.
Johnny was horrified. He knew it was all his fault. Still, the feeling didn't last long. No. No, at Mortal Meadows, his father gave him the scolding of his life. But it went in one ear and out the other. And the first thing Pop knew...
Pop, what do humans look like?
What do you want to know for?
I just wondered.
If you'll just see that you're never caught by one, I'll be satisfied.
But how will I know to run away if I don't know what a human looks like, huh, Pop?
All right. A human is the biggest thing you'll ever see. It's bigger than the great bushes on the meadow. It's bigger than this community. Now, are you satisfied?
Yes, sir.
Well, then.
But Johnny's curiosity wasn't satisfied.
No.
There were humans nearby, and he'd never seen one. So what do you think he did, huh?
Where are you going, little leprechaun?
Mr. Pixie, where did you come from?
From nowhere and everywhere. That's where pixies always come from. But you haven't answered my question.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm wiser than that, my friend. I know where you're going. You want to see a human, don't you?
How did you know?
Professional secret. But don't be afraid. I don't want to stop you. In fact, I'll show you the way.
So Johnny and Black Peter went through the green forest and over the hills to the village. And there, Johnny Leprechaun saw his first human. They were huge, clumsy things, three times the size of Black Peter the Pixie. Peter led him through the streets until they came to a great house from which drifted, the most tantalizing aroma Johnny had ever savored.
What's that smell?
That's pies baking.
What's pies?
A wonderful human delicacy. You'll see. Get on my back and we'll climb up to the windowsill.
I'm afraid.
Go on, or you'll never know what a pie's like.
Okay.
That's it. Now, take a bite.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Go on. Eat some more.
Who's there?
We're even now, my foolish leprechaun.
Peter laughed so loudly that the woman rushed to the window to see who was trying to steal one of her pies. But Peter was gone, and only little Johnny remained. He tried to make himself invisible, but just then, he fell flat on his face in the pie. Then he felt himself lifted right up into the air.
Why, faith, and what's this? A bird? No, it's like a doll, only not half so big.
Let go of me!
The saints be preserved, it talks. You didn't think I'd catch you, did you?
Mr. Pixie, help me.
Why, I'd believe you're a leprechaun. Isn't that a fact now?
Yes, ma'am.
And if you catch a leprechaun, he has to tell you the secret of wealth.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, tell me quickly, what's the secret? Speak. I've caught you fairly. Tell me how I can become rich.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I guess I was asleep in class that day.
Oh, you little insect. I'll teach you to eat my pie.
And with that, she threw Johnny, pie and all, right out of the window. Of course, the word got back to Leprechaun Local 47 that one of their members had disgraced them. Yes. For as Johnny had been taught in school, each of them was honor-bound to reveal the secret of wealth if he was caught. Ah, there was great sadness in Mortal Meadows. Yes, the bad little leprechaun who didn't listen was never heard from again. All the other leprechauns were so ashamed that they all moved to the South Pole and became penguins.
This is Ray Milland again. I hoped you liked the story of Johnny the Leprechaun, and I hope you didn't feel too sorry about his coming to such a bad end. After all, Johnny never really did exist, except in the eerie world of the little people. But there are people for whom we should feel sorry. Those men and women whose marriages are failing because they've allowed no place for God. Those families which are breaking up because they've forgotten the help that can be obtained through daily family prayer. Begin family prayer in your own home today. Find out for yourselves that the family that prays together stays together. Thank you for being with us, and God bless you.
Our grateful thanks to Alan Young, Edmund Benn, and Ray Milland for their appearances, and to Marvin Bryan for writing our play. Original music was scored and conducted by Max Terr. This production of Family Theater Incorporated was directed by David Young. The supporting cast included Ed Max, Arthur Q. Bryan, Howard McNair, Junius Matthews, and Gloria Gordon. Next in For the Love of Angel, your host will be Jack Haley. This series of the Family Theater broadcasts is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this kind of program and by the Mutual Broadcasting System, which has responded to this need. Be with us next week at the same time when Jack Haley and Stanley Clements will star on Family Theater. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Well, now, that's what I call an unexpected ending. I never would have thought the leprechauns would move to the South Pole and become penguins because they were ashamed of Johnny. You just heard the Family Theater episode, Leprechaun Who Wouldn't Listen. The story was first heard on Wednesday, March 16, 1949, on Mutual. Next, I'm going to feature an Irish-themed episode from the popular Western series, Have Gun, Will Travel. Have Gun, Will Travel was unusual because it began on television and then moved to radio in an attempt to prop up the dying medium. The series ran on CBS Radio from November 23, 1958 until November 27, 1960 and starred John Daner as Paladin, a San Francisco-based traveling gunfighter whom people hired to do the dangerous work they either couldn't or wouldn't do. Today's episode is titled Irish Luck and was first heard at 6 p.m. on Sunday, April 24, 1960 on CBS. Enjoy.
Fused, Bannon, but don't bother to explain now. Ride out of here before that mob decides to hang you. Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Come in.
Good morning, Miss Wong.
You want Missy Wong help you pack?
Oh, thanks. I don't think so. I'm traveling light this trip. I'll be riding through some pretty rough country.
Oh, where you go?
I'm doing a job for an insurance company, Miss Wong. They're concerned about their losses. Want me to survey the freight routes up through the north and check with the express offices along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that does it. Hey, boy told me that you and he were going out in the town last night.
Oh, yes, I take Missy Wong to see very fine stage play.
What did you see?
Oh, my. There was a little girl named Topsy.
Oh, Topsy, yes.
Topsy, yes. Mm-hmm. And a little girl named Eva.
Yes.
And nice old man named Mr. Uncle Tom.
Mr. Uncle Tom.
Mr. Uncle Tom, Lisa. You know what, Mr. Paladin? Poor Mr. Uncle Tom,
I understand, Miss Wong.
A little girl named Eva, Oh, Mrs. Paladin, we have such a good time.
On the road between the town of Lexington, Massachusetts, and the Concord River Bridge are a number of stones and monuments that are a part of our American heritage. In the spring of 1775, the Minutemen of New England brought together a supply of stores and munitions in the small village of Concord. The provincial Congress had voted for the stockpile for defense only, but British General Gage regarded the collected munitions and stores as potentially dangerous to King George's troops. On April 19, 1775, Gage dispatched a force under Major Pitcairn to capture the stockpile.
The route of the British troops took them through the town of Lexington, which had been alerted by Paul Revere and others. At Lexington, the British were met by a small American force, and a skirmish ensued on Village Green. The American Revolution had begun. Their superior numbers allowed the British to continue their advance toward Concord. But William Prescott, who had ridden with Paul Revere, carried a warning of their approach. Pitcairn's British regulars moved into Concord and occupied north and south bridges, while a small group of minutemen waited across the river for reinforcements. When help for the colonials arrived from nearby towns, the British were forced to withdraw across North Bridge. Here shots were exchanged, and the British were forced into a retreat. The retreat soon became a disorderly rout as minutemen fired on Pitcairn's men from behind walls, houses, and barns. The colonials had won the day. Today, the brave actions of the American fighting men at Lexington and Concord are marked by many monuments, including the famous Statue of the Minuteman. Some of the original landmarks are still preserved. The monuments at Lexington and Concord remind us of the rich heritage that as Americans we share and stand ready to defend.
The towns along my route were scattered and the distances were great. I had reached northern Nevada and I was following a trail that wound its way over a rugged mountain pass. The trail had been chipped from a rocky cliff, which rose straight up on one side, and then took a sheer drop of several hundred feet on the other. When I reached the top and started down toward the Humboldt River Valley, I saw a man ahead of me. He was riding lazy, guiding his horse carefully, when suddenly, on a sharp turn, the animal seemed to spook, fold up, and in the next instant was jogging down the path with an empty saddle. Well, I couldn't travel any faster. I could only hope that when I reached the spot where the man had gone over the edge, I'd find him alive. Ooh, ooh. Hey, down there. Can you hear me?
Yes, man, and it's a fine sound to be sure.
Are you all right?
Oh, I'm fine. Until this bit of a tree stump I'm hanging to gives way.
You got any kind of foothold down there?
Some.
I've got a rope up here. Hold on, I'll get it to you.
Oh, that's fine, sir.
Oh, enough. Easy, boy. Now stand. All right. Here she goes. You got it?
I got it.
I tied it around your waist.
Yes, sir.
Let me know when you're ready. I'll start hauling.
Yes, I'm trying.
Good.
Ah, there. Ready now.
All right. Here we go.
Now hold it, man.
What? What's the trouble?
Why, well, would you give us a bit of slack on that rope, will you now? It's the present for Katie.
What's that?
Katie's present that fell out in my pocket. I can reach it if you give me a bit of slack.
How's that?
Oh, that's fine, sir. All right, haul away, my hearty.
Oh, ah, it's grateful. Grateful I am to you, sir. Oh, Bannon's my name, sir. Red, they call me, and I needn't be telling you why. And, when I catch me breath, I have a few words to say about that no good, cussed, not-headed horse that twice in a month has set me down without even so much as a by your leave.
Never mind the horse. We better check you for broken bones.
Oh, no, sir, no, no. Bannon's a tough one, though I am hurting a bit in a few places, but, praise be, Katie's present is safe.
Katie's present.
Would you be after knowing what day this is, sir?
Oh, yes, it's Thursday.
That's right, and March the 17th, and that, of course, is St. Patrick's Day. But more than that, it's the birthday of my darling, Katie.
Your wife?
Yes, sir. Like a man, I'm afraid I was after forgetting the occasion. Until Katie, like a woman, dropped a hint here and there, so I had to saddle up and ride into town to buy the gig off.
Well, we better get started down the trail. You go ride my horse and I'll walk.
Oh, now, a fine thing that'd be. To thank a man for saving me life by taking the horse out from under him. No, sir, O'Bannon will walk. A good walk will take kinks out of me.
was almost sundown before we reached the O'Bannon farmhouse. Katie was waiting at the gate. She was tiny and gay and very pretty. And she insisted that I stay to share the birthday celebration. Then it got so late, they both insisted that I stay the night. They were warm, friendly people. And when I left the next morning, it was with the promise to see them on my way back. My business took me on into Idaho, and it was nearly 2 months before I passed through Nevada again. The last stop on my route was the town of Tawana, only 20 miles from the O'Bannon place. I checked into a hotel, then started for the Horseshoe Saloon.
You ain't gonna get a drink in there, mister.
Oh, why not?
We're holding a trial in there today.
Trial?
Gonna start as soon as the judge gets here. Once it starts, it won't last long.
Open and shut case.
Yeah, I just kept watching. I knew I'd see the feller again someday.
Well, who's that?
Fellow on trial. Robbed my stage, killed my shotgun rider. I got a good look at him. I knew I'd spot him again, and I did. Over in Lander County. Sheriff brought him in. You gonna visit the trial?
No. No, I have business at the freight office. Just thought I'd have a drink first.
We'll fix him. Dirty killer. Fellow name of O'Bannon.
O'Bannon?
Know him?
Well, I'm acquainted with an O'Bannon up this way, but I'm sure it isn't the same one.
Well, we're going to fix him. Quick and good.
About 10 miles north of Springfield, Massachusetts, and 5 miles northeast of Chicopee, is Westover Air Force Base, headquarters for the 8th Air Force. The field was named after Oscar Westover, who was chief of the Air Corps from 1935 until his death in 1938. Westover was born in Bay City, Michigan, July 1883. He entered the Army as a private in 1901 and graduated from West Point in 1906. During the infancy of flight, Westover became interested in the air service and worked in the office of Director of Air Service in 1918. In 1922, he became the Director of Aircraft Production for the Army. Then in 1928, Westover was offered a post as Assistant to the Chief of the Air Corps. He held this assignment until 1935, when he was commissioned a Major General and moved up the ladder to Air Corps Chief. About this time, there was much discussion concerning the value of air power. Like other top Air Corps officers, General Westover pointed out the need for a stronger Air Force. Together with General Andrews, he advocated a policy whereby the Air Corps could have more fighting power and become a more independent unit. Unfortunately, in 1938, Westover was killed in a plane crash before his recommendations were placed in effect. Despite his untimely death, Westover holds an important place in the growth of American air power. Men like General Westover serve as a reminder that those who today wear the Air Force uniform also play a most important part in the progress of air power, the instrument which is so vital for the preservation of our American way of life.
I had started down the street to the Tawana freight office when I saw the sheriff bringing the prisoner from the jail. It was hard to believe, but the O'Bannon on trial was my red-haired friend of the mountain trail. He didn't glance in my direction, but I decided to postpone my business and visit the trial after all. What the court convened in the Horseshoe Saloon lacked in formality, it made up for in its obvious zeal to fix him quick and good. Circuit Judge Charlie Cagle called the court to order, and Wes Barker took the stand.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, self you got?
I do.
Sit down.
Well, there he sits, Judge. Right there.
Now, please, Mr. Barker, not so fast. I want you to tell us just what happened.
Well, the coach wasn't running just on schedule that day. We didn't have no passengers. But we had some important freight to carry.
Valuable freight?
Gold. The shipment wasn't ready on our regular time to leave, so we waited for it.
And when was this?
Oh, 2 months ago.
You remember what day? exactly?
Sure. It was March 17th. We just got a ways out of town, about sundown it was, when this man right here, he busts out in the road and flags us down and yells, "This is a holdup." He's got a gun right in my face. Now, Joe Pennelly rode shotgun with me for 6 years. He knew when to throw down on a holdup man, when not to. Joe didn't throw down on this fella, but he plugged him anyway. Got a shot off at me, too, but he just nicked me.
He took the gold?
What he could carry. And I got a good look at him. And last month, when I seen him over in Lander County, I recognized him and told the sheriff. That's him sitting right there.
Yeah, I guess that'll be all, Mr. Parker.
Judge Cagle, Your Honor.
Yes. Say, don't I know you?
I think so. My name is Paladin.
Sure. What can I do for you, Mr. Paladin?
Well, I'd like to be sworn in, Your Honor. A man's life is at stake here, and I just don't understand it. There's something terribly wrong.
Well, come on up here.
Thank you.
All right, let's keep it quiet now. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, help you God?
I do.
Yeah.
Judge, if this murder and holdup occurred on March 17th, about sundown, the man sitting here, O'Bannon, can't be guilty.
Quiet down. Let's keep order. Why do you say that?
Because I was with O'Bannon on March 17th, at that time. And he was over 40 miles from here.
Let's have order, please. Well, you better tell us the whole story. Start from the beginning, Mr. Paladin. All right, case dismissed. That's all for today.
Yes, sir? Yeah. I can't figure what your game is, but you sure didn't make yourself any friends here.
Look, I'm sorry, Barker. I told the truth.
Yeah. You might have put a reasonable doubt in the judge's mind, but I know better.
You said yourself it was almost sundown when the holdup occurred, and it must have all happened pretty fast. You could be mistaken, you know.
No. No mistake. I saw O'Bannon kill my shotgun rider. Joe had a lot of friends. If the law ain't going to take care of the man that murdered him, maybe his friends will have to.
That's mighty careless talk, Barker.
Look at that. Sheriff's turning him loose. That dirty killer walking out of town a free man when he ought to be hanging on the end of a rope right now. And we can thank you for butting in with your big lying mouth.
I didn't lie.
I know better. Now, like I say, I don't know what your game is, but it ain't over yet. Here comes your friend. You ain't seen the last of this. You can tell him.
Hey, O'Bannon.
Oh, hello, friend.
O'Bannon, you better get out of here.
Well, thanks, and what do I owe you?
What do you mean?
Well, one good turn deserves another. What can I do for you? What do you want?
Well, I don't want anything. I had to tell the truth.
Truth? Mister, you never saw me before in your life, and you know it.
Listen, if it's some sort of a joke, I don't appreciate it. And I'm afraid this is no time for questions and answers. These people watching us, they're in an ugly mood.
They don't waste any love on me, do they?
They're dangerous. I've seen it happen too many times. You better get out of town as fast as you can.
Oh, but I intend to. I have my plans all made. And thanks again, friend, for your pretty lies.
You have me real confused, O'Bannon. But I'll expect some answers for this, and they better be good. I'll ride out to your place tomorrow.
My place?
All right, just get going, O'Bannon.
Oh, sure.
Oh, Paladin.
What?
You'll find me at North Fork.
I watched O'Bannon walk away, trying in my mind to make some kind of sense out of the whole thing. His last remark was easily heard by the people left in the courtroom, and with the mood that crowd was in, he might just as well have been sending out invitations to his own lynching. There was no question about it. If he really intended to show up in North Fork, he'd have a lot of angry men waiting for him. As soon as I had finished my business the next day, I headed out of town in the direction of the O'Bannon farmhouse. I wanted to see Katie. As I rode up to the house, I noticed a winded, lathered horse, ground-tied, in the front yard. Ooh.
Come back. Come on.
Hey, Katie.
Katie.
Hannigan.
What have you done? O'Bannon. He's dead.
God have mercy on me.
Give me the gun.
Oh, it had to be done.
I don't understand this, Katie. Your own husband...
No, not my husband, not Red. It is Liam O'Bannon lies there.
Liam?
Born of the same mother within the same hour. And on the outside is alike as two peas in a pod, my man and Liam. But inside, one is black and one is white.
Now, wait a minute, Kitty. You mean this man is your husband's twin brother?
Yes. But my O'Bannon is the daylight. And this one, the dark, possessed of the evil ones he was. I knew it came when the two came courting and it was Red I chose to marry.
What was Liam doing here?
It was after forcing me to leave this place with him. With wicked words of how he had sent my O'Bannon riding off to his death.
Off to it? Katie, where's Red?
Gone to answer the call of Liam, as he always has, should Liam so much as crook his little finger. One of Liam's rogues that traveled with him came early this morning with a message.
What was the message?
That Red should ride to North Fork.
North Fork?
And wait until Liam should meet him there. But Liam came here instead to take me off with him.
Katie, it just might be that Red is riding to his death. How long ago did he start?
Oh, some time now.
I'll have to go after him. Katie, will you get me a blanket?
Oh, yes.
I'm afraid Liam must ride with me. As the crow flies, North Fork wasn't far. But the trail over the mountain was narrow and winding, and travel was slow. With the head start Red had, it was a chancy thing whether I could reach there in time to save him from the trap he was riding into. It was late in the day when I saw the little town just ahead.
All right, mister, that's far enough.
Marker.
Drop your gun.
I've got something to tell you.
We had to listen to you once before. We're done listening now. Drop the gun.
Mister, we ain't going to take any interference this time. I told you it's up to us now to take care of the man who killed our friend Joe Pinelli. We're waiting for him.
You mean he hasn't shown up yet?
No, but we'll get him.
Well, you won't have to wait any longer. The man you want is riding my second horse, wrapped in that blanket.
What are you talking about?
See for yourself.
Jim, all right. What happened?
Doesn't matter. The death of your friend Joe Pinelli has been avenged, Barker. An eye for an eye. That's what you wanted, isn't it? So now I trust you'll give Liam O'Bannon a suitable burial. Then I started back down the mountain trail. Whatever had delayed Red O'Bannon's trip to North Fork had saved his life. But I became more and more concerned as to what had happened to him. I reached the end of the rocky ledge, and there, off to the right, in a grassy meadow, was a horse that looked somehow familiar. He was nibbling grass and wearing an empty saddle. I turned around and went back up the trail.
Hey, Red! Red O'Bannon! Hey! Hey, Red!
That's the voice of an angel!
Ooh. Red?
Yes!
Red, you all right?
For the time being. Yeah, Paladin.
Yeah.
That's no good. Cussed, not-headed horse. He did it again.
Yeah, well, you can be mighty grateful to that no-good, cussed, not-headed horse.
What's that?
Never mind. I'll get the rope.
Have gun,
Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Ann Dowd. Specially featured in the cast was Ben Wright, with Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, and Gene Bates. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel is brought to you through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Truly was the luck of the Irish for Mr. O'Bannon, and she should be thankful to his ornery horse for saving his life. You just heard Irish Luck from the series Have Gun, Will Travel. The episode was first heard on the evening of Sunday, April 24th, 1960, on CBS Radio. We have a few minutes left to fill before we leave each other for this week. In searching for something short enough to fit the time, but lighthearted enough to fit a St. Patrick's Day show, I came across a clip of bloopers from an episode of The Roy Rogers Show. These bloopers were never broadcast during the original program, but they will provide you with some great laughter. I should warn you, though, there are a couple of swear words in the bloopers. Let's roll the tape.
Good work, Trigger. Good work, boy.
I know Trigger could beat that critter. Well, see, you got the Henriette, or the Harriette, or the oh, shucks, that ornery puppet.
I got it, all right.
What's the answer to it, Roy? How did that thing talk?
There's only one answer to that, Dale. And if I'm not mistaken...
If you ain't mistaken, what?
You know, hold it, Gabby. Looks like we've got another visitor. It's Reverend Smith this time.
Yeah, and he sure is right.
Oh, let's start it, though. That's no good.
What happened to it? I didn't know. Jesus Christ, I was terrific.
Do you know how a bell could be made to ring with no one there to ring it? Do you know how a lifeless puppet can be made to speak? And what's the answer to the handwriting on the wall? We'll know the answers to all these questions in a very few minutes. But now, friends, Roy Rogers has something he'd like to tell you. Roy?
Thanks, Art. Today is a big moment in my life, believe me. Shucks, folks. Oh, that's a good start. Hmm?
Well, it came on. It was a good start. What happened? Yeah.
Good work, Trigger. Good work, boy.
Yeah, I know Trigger could beat that critter. Well, I see you got the Henrietta, the Harrietta, or the, oh, shucks, the ornery puppy.
Well, I got it all right.
What's the answer to it, Roy? How did that thing talk?
There's only one answer to that, Dale. And if I'm not mistaken...
If you ain't mistaken, what?
Hold it, Gabby. Looks like we've got another visitor.
Yeah.
It's Reverend Smith this time.
And he sure is racking into the double R bar. Hey, Reverend. Reverend. What in tarnation?
Roy, I need your help. The strangest thing has happened.
What is it, Reverend?
The poor box. The poor box at the church. It's been robbed.
Oh, who would do a terrible thing like that?
I don't know, Dale. I discovered the robbery less than an hour ago. What's more, Roy, I found these inside the box.
Strings? Marionette strings?
Yes. Roy, what is the meaning of these puppets? I thought that affair of yesterday was someone's idea of a joke. A joke in very poor taste, but still a joke. But this robbing of the poor box,
it's no joke, Reverend, I agree. It's a trick, and a mighty serious one. Dale.
Yes?
Take this puppet back to your office, will you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. God damn it.
We're off. What the hell now?
We're not.
Do you know? Do you know how a bell could be made to ring with no one there to ring it? Do you know how a lifeless puppet can be made to speak? And what's the answer to the handwriting on the wall? We'll know the answers to all these questions in a very few minutes. But now, friends, Roy Rogers has something he'd like to tell you. Roy?
Thanks, Art. Today is a big moment in my life, and believe me, shucks, my folks brought me up on Quaker Oats. Quaker Oats has been a pal of mine since I was knee-high to a duck, so I'm mighty proud that we're teaming up together. I'm going to sort of be the Quaker Oats ambassador to your house. And I'm not going to be backward about telling you to eat Quaker Oats, because I know it's mighty good eating and mighty good for you, too. So from now on, folks, when you think of Roy Rogers, doggone it, think of Quaker Oats.
Thanks, Roy. And friends, remember the wonderful benefits to everyone in delicious whole-grain Quaker Oats for breakfast. Yes, there's more energy and endurance for you grown-ups, more growth and health for you youngsters in good wholesome oatmeal than any other whole-grain cereal. That's because Quaker Oats is so much richer in vital food elements like protein, vitamin B1, and iron. Remember to buy Quaker Oats, the giant of the cereals. Quaker and Mother's Oats are the same.
Delicious, nutritious, makes you feel ambitious. The giant of the cereal is Quaker Oats.
Well, I don't know about you, but I found those bloopers hilarious. However, I have to admit that I was surprised by Roy Rogers' use of swear words, as that does seem out of character for him. But I guess at the end of the day, even Roy Rogers was just as human as the rest of us. You just heard some bloopers from an edition of The Roy Rogers Show. Those bloopers were never broadcast during the series' original run. I'm afraid our time together for this week is almost over. I hope you enjoyed those episodes, and I do hope you'll come back next week at the same time for more Radio Classics. If you'd like to send me your thoughts on today's show, my email address is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com. And my postal address is Old Parlor Radio, 2080 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.